This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
But it is 6 o'clock, which means it is now time for...
It's impossible.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Full of hijinks.
And look, I'm not your friend, so I'm not your friend, I'm your enemy.
And educational.
You sound like you're a moron.
It's What I Learned on TikTok, starring Gordon Damer.
Oh, it is that time, people. I, as a 53-year-old man, spent way too much time on that TikTok app. But it's because I learn interesting, but yet, I don't know, useless information. So what I've done, crafted this little segment, give it a little airtime to the people working on the show today, Joe and Julian. I tried to combine Joe and Julian there. How it works, I will give them four pieces of information, three of which I've just made up. But one piece of the information that I give them is completely true, and it is something that I learned this week on TikTok. And I will preface it, Joe, Julian, by saying I think this week I've done a very... I don't know if the facts themselves are that mind-blowing, but I think that the balance... I think it's going to be very hard to decipher what is true and what is not on this week's edition of What I Learned on TikTok. I think I did a very good job of coming up with three lies for each of you.
Oh, great. So my first week back is the best week ever. Fantastic.
Yeah, well, I could be. I don't know. Maybe you nail it. Maybe you get it right out of the box. I hope not, but I think I've done a good job of covering my tracks this week is what I'm saying. So, Joe, are you going first here?
Yeah, I'll go first.
All right, here we go. Number one, before he was president, Jimmy Carter rappelled into a nuclear reactor while it was in partial meltdown and saved the city of Ottawa. Number two, as a current sign of evolution, scientists believe that human pointer fingers are becoming flatter at the tips, that from operating as shoehorns. Number three, there are no FAA regulations on the books that passengers have to unrecline their seats when landing. That is simply done to alleviate the needs of stewardesses and stewards to spend extra time putting all the seats up when everybody's gotten off the plane. And then number four, there are nearly 500 different species of baboons in the world. So again, to recap, number one, before he was president, Jimmy Carter rappelled into a nuclear reactor to save the city of Ottawa while the reactor was in partial meltdown. Number two, scientists believe that human pointer fingers are becoming flatter at the tips from operating as shoehorns. Number three, no FAA regulations are that passengers have to unrecline their seats when landing. That's just done to help out the stewards and stewardesses. Or number four, 500 different species of baboons in the world.
Wide-ranging as usual.
Yeah, I like to get a lot of different topics there. That For You page sometimes is a wild ride, man. You don't know what's popping up on that thing next. I finally got off horse and cow hooves TikTok.
Oh,
I was getting a lot of
like
hooves talk. Yeah. Fixing of hooves and all that kind of stuff.
I think because it's just been on my mind lately, I'm going to go with the FAA regulations on reclining seats of airplanes.
Okay. You're going to lock that in?
Lock that in.
No, that is actually incorrect. No, there was a big TikToker that put that out there, and people came in his comments and told, no, that's not true. That's done in case there's a crash. You got to be able to get people out safely. I can't imagine that anybody couldn't get out safely if their seat was just a little reclined, but okay, fine. We'll follow all the rules. But no, that's not it. You're telling me somebody wouldn't be able to get out of a plane crash? Like, they were okay, but their seat was just a little bit back, and now they can't move?
Well, I mean, ask the people on Alaskan Airlines.
Well, that's because the roof has fallen off. Even if I was in that situation, I'd be like, that's fine. I'll just buckle my seatbelt. I don't need to go to the bathroom. Let's just go. When I go to the airport, I just want to leave.
Man.
Let's just go. Let's just do it. They have no roof? That's fine. Let's go. We're fine.
Apparently now the FBI told them that they were part of a crime with that situation. That is a wild story. That's
FBI has to focus more on Shohei Ohtani's betting habits.
Yeah, you want to talk about an ever-evolving story.
Right. So now you're down to three, Joe. Jimmy Carter rappelling into a nuclear reactor, scientists believing that human pointer fingers are becoming flatter, or 500 different kinds of baboons.
I'm going to go with 500 different species of baboons.
All right. Lock it in.
Lock it in.
No, there's five. There's five different kinds of baboons. Five. Baboons is just fun to say. Baboons. It's just a fun word. Baboons.
I really don't want to go with Jimmy Carter, but give me Jimmy Carter.
Lock it in?
Lock it in.
That is true. Before Jimmy Carter, Jimmy Carter's had a wild life, man. He was working at a nuclear reactor, and there, I don't know why he was the one. I guess he drew the short straw. I'm not sure. But it was in partial meltdown. He's taking all this radiation. And he was able to save the city of Ottawa from a nuclear reactor meltdown. It's in his book. Apparently, he wrote a book.
Did he get the Medal of Honor from the city of Ottawa?
I don't know what he got. I feel like he deserved it. But yeah, Jimmy Carter, before he was president, he repelled. If you told me I would get all the winnings from Ipe Misuhara's betting losses, but I had to rappel into a nuclear reactor. I think, and save the city of Ottawa. City of Ottawa is on its own, man.
Would
I'm
you
not
do
going
it
down
if
there.
You were?
No!
Would you do it if you were guaranteed that you would live?
Well, for the time being, that's one thing. But the
you don't want the after effects.
No, I saw that movie the day after. Oh, when you were a kid in the '80s, they put that movie on the day after about the nuclear bomb. Oh my God, everybody couldn't sleep for a week after seeing that. Steve Guttenberg was in it. Poor Steve Guttenberg. All right, Julian, you had enough time to rest up there, my friend. Speaking of wide-ranging. Okay, here we go. Number one. Yes, number one. Mexican cartel activity dropped to its lowest levels ever recorded in the weeks after Grand Theft Auto 3 was released. Number two, of the 30 fastest 100-meter sprint times, 21 were run by athletes who tested positive later for enhancing drugs. The other 9 times were all Usain Bolt. Number three, at 83 years old, Al Pacino, the great Al Pacino, is the 6th oldest father on record. Or number four, when you get a tattoo removal, you pee out the ink. So again, to recap, wide-ranging as I like to believe, Mexican cartel activity dropped to its lowest levels ever recorded in the weeks after Grand Theft Auto 3 was released. Number two, of the 30 fastest 100-meter sprint times, 21 of them were run by athletes who tested positive for drugs at one point. The other 9 were all Usain Bolt. Number three, at 83 years old, Al Pacino, is the 6th oldest father on record. Or number four, when you get a tattoo removal, you pee out the ink.
So I'm going to cut two out.
Okay.
One and two I'm going to cut off.
The cartels and the Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially the Usain Bolt. 21, okay. Was it?
Like 21 of them were tested positive for enhancing drugs. The other 9.
Russians were that fast, so.
Right.
Three and four to me sound the most plausible.
Okay.
But the one that I'm going to go with is number four.
Number four, when you get tattoo removals, you pee out the ink.
Yeah, I'm going to lock it in.
Lock it in. Joe, do you want to help him out after your round?
Personally, I would go with the 21 sprinting times.
Right.
That's okay. The one I would go with.
Well, I'll tell you that Julian is actually correct. Yeah, when you get the tattoo removal, the ink goes into your bloodstream and then eventually gets filtered out through your urine. So yeah, I thought it just kind of went into the air. I don't know. I have no functional knowledge of anything. I don't know how anything works in the world. I know there's a comedian, Nate Bargatze, who said like if he went back in time, he really wouldn't be able to exploit that. I am exactly the same way. He's cooking right now. I have no idea how anything technically works. If you need something that is completely useless, like useless information from TikTok, I'm your guy. If you need functional knowledge about something in the world, don't even look my way. And certainly if you want me to rappel into a nuclear reactor, forget it. All right. Well, we got a very good job, Julian. You've got to get Julian a better time slot here. He's killing this segment. Okay, so we got one last one. You guys can team up on this one. It's reversed this time. Only one of these things is a lie. Three of them are true, so now it's a little bit more difficult. And here we go. Number one, people fart more on airplanes because of the change in altitude. Number two, in the movie Escape from New York, the producers bought 3,000 AK-47s because it was simply cheaper to buy them and then sell them later than buying prop guns. Number three, kangaroos never stop growing. Or number four, you do not have to be a lawyer to become a Supreme Court justice. So again, you're looking for the one lie.
I know which one I'm going with.
Okay.
I'm going to lock in the Escape from New York.
Okay.
AK-47 situation.
Can I just get three again?
Three was kangaroos never stop growing.
I'm going to lock that one in as the lie.
Okay. All right. Well, I will tell you, one of you is right, one of you is wrong. Joe, you nailed it. Yeah, the movie Escape from New York. No, that was actually true of another movie that had Nicolas Cage in it. They bought the guns and then they sold them later on. They also bought a bunch of tanks and then sold them to Libya.
But tanks?
Tanks. They bought like 300 tanks. I don't know where you get a good deal on tanks, but they bought tanks and then they sold them to Libya later on.
What is this, Family Guy?
I'm not sure, but I don't know all the details. Again, I don't have any functional knowledge. I just know what I know, and I know this is what I've learned on this week on TikTok, and now because of this segment, you have learned it too.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
We've been talking a lot about, we opened with the Knicks and their win over the Brooklyn Nets today. Nice performance back at home. Nice little part of the schedule here with the Nets, the Pistons, and the Nets. And with the Knicks win today, they are now once again tied for that fourth spot with Orlando, one game behind the Cavaliers for third. And with these three games here, these are games you got to, there's no slip-ups, right? You can't afford to have any slip-ups here. These, you got to be able to bank these wins and hope that you get healthy by the time you get a little closer to the end of the season and OG's back and Randall's back, and it certainly seems like Mitchell. It's crazy that Mitchell Robinson now seems like the guy who might be coming back the quickest, but we shall see. So we talked on the Knicks earlier on. We've focused a lot on Shohei Ohtani and that situation, which doesn't have a whole lot of answers or a whole lot of facts right now, and the facts that we are being given, or at least the stories that we are being told, don't seem all that reliable. Joe, you had a point about Ohtani.
Well, there's just one thing that doesn't make any sense to me. If he's truly innocent with this situation, why just let the speculation go to the ether? Why not, if you're truly innocent, come out and say, you know, I did this or I didn't do this? I don't understand. And maybe that's just me being naive and there's more layers to this. But the more and more he just pushes this away and kind of, like Major League Baseball, just hopes this story goes away, I think the worse off he personally looks.
I think that I'm sure he is taking the advice of his team and his people around him that, no, we're not going to put out any statement right now for whatever reason. I think that he is clearly, in terms of media, he's very sheltered, right? He gets to decide when he talks, when he doesn't want to talk. It's not a typical situation, and people have kind of guessed that maybe that's why he didn't want to be here in New York, because he wouldn't have gotten that kind of treatment here where he'd just kind of be able to avoid things.
Could you imagine?
That would not fly here, I don't think. But I'll say this. If he was as great a player here as he was everywhere else and you were winning, I mean, Leon Rose doesn't talk to the media. It doesn't seem like Knick fans care at all. So I'm sure that Ohtani would be able to get away with it if he were playing for the Yankees or the Mets here. As long as the success was there. If the success wasn't there or the teams were bad, then it would pop up and be an issue.
Well, A-Rod had success here. He won MVPs. I get he didn't win as many World Series as initially thought, but it wasn't like he was horrible here.
A-Rod was fine, but he wasn't sheltered or anything like that. He answered questions most of the time when there were things to ask questions about. He didn't get like a special media treatment where he would just avoid the media wherever he wanted. He spoke to the media far more, it seems like, than Ohtani does. I would think that with Ohtani and the situation being what it is right now, you don't want to put any air in the fire. You want the fire to kind of peter out on its own, and now it's not going to peter out.
Oh, it's completely. A five-alarm fire.
Nah, I don't think it is. I don't think it's a five-alarm fire, and it's a big story, and a lot of people are watching right now. But I don't know that it doesn't seem like a disaster yet. And if you come out and lock yourself into a story, and then a part of that, if he comes out and gives a statement, what does it add? Okay, he's on record as saying he didn't have anything to do with this. He doesn't get any benefit. Well, he said he didn't do anything to do. He had nothing to do with this. I don't think that it adds anything to a situation that he already has. You know, people that think that he doesn't have anything to do with it think that right now, and he's not going to change any minds of people who are skeptical about the story that's being peddled to them right now.
I mean,
stays quiet, you kind of wait until your time to say something that you can score the most points. I think that that's probably what his team is doing.
I mean, maybe I'm just looking at this too from a athlete's perspective. He's going to be asked about this, and everybody on his team is going to be asked about this for the length of the season.
He doesn't talk to the media. He's not going to answer any. Now, people on his team are going to be
but
asked
But Freddie
about
Freeman,
it.
Mookie Betts, Dave Roberts, they're going to be asked this question. Well, Andrew Freeman's going to be asked this question.
Absolutely.
So, at least for me, if I'm Ohtani, I do what's best for the team, make a statement, and then the team can just say, well, Ohtani's spoken about this. We're focused on the 2024 season and what helps us win.
I'm sure before they come back and start playing games, he will and his team will put out some sort of statement, and who knows, maybe he will have some sort of media availability about it. I doubt it, but maybe there will be some more clarity. He will go on record probably then, but not right now.
Will he do it like he did his marriage? And just put it on Instagram and just say, hey, I'm married?
Very, very possible. Very possible that it's just a statement that, boom, 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 this is where I stand. I'm not going to be taking any questions about it at the time. I mean, he's really, I hear people, well, this goes against what it seems like his character is, like a caller or somebody was talking on one of the shows about. I mean, it seems like he's kind of an unknown quantity. He's a great player. But in terms of who he is as a person, it doesn't feel like we really know all that much about him right now. We don't know anything about him all that deep, right? It doesn't anything that you know about him, it's stuff that it's very calculated. Like when he's getting the MVP, he's got the dog there, everybody, oh my God, it's so adorable. But we don't know anything behind the scenes with him. He's just not that available. Maybe the language barrier is part of it, but I think it's clearly calculated. He doesn't want to have to deal with that part of it.
I understand that from like a because he's a massive celebrity in Japan too. I'm sure he does a bunch of press over there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you add to it, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just doing again from my point of view. If I was him and being naive, if I was innocent, I would be adamant. Crisis.
Yeah.
Situation
well,
or not, be damned, I would come out and say
I'm sure
I'm innocent.
Maybe he does want to do that. If he is truly innocent of this, maybe he does want to do that. But when you have lawyers or advisors behind the scenes, they have a way of handling it. And he has a crisis team, and I'm sure he's got agents and managers and everybody else kind of chiming in on the team, Major League Baseball. Everybody's going to have a little opinion on the right way to handle the situation, and we'll see if it turns out. I'll say this, they're not exactly doing a bang-up job so far. I will say that. And again, their entire mission is to protect him. That much is clear. Val is in the Bronx. Val, what's going on, man?
Good afternoon. How you doing, Gordon? What's going on?
I'm good. What's going on? What do you got?
I'd like to talk about the Shohei thing. I got a couple of things I want to say, but, you know, just to start off, what you said just now, you hit on something right there because you guys were debating it a moment ago, and I'm speculating now, but I wonder how much of his actions right now are even being, to some extent, suggested by Major League Baseball and by the Dodgers. Because if you remember correctly, the Dodgers were the one who had made the translator available to speak to the team. And
yeah,
I
that
believe,
made no
if
sense.
I'm not mistaken, they were also the ones who had something to do with him initially getting in front of, I think, the folks at ESPN who were trying to talk to him in the interview before they pulled back the initial statement. But that being said, I, you know, everybody's saying like, you know, because you get all this whataboutism And like you said earlier, as soon as something like this, anytime anything with gambling comes up, you hear the Pete Rose Brigade come in and all that stuff like that.
Right.
You know, and that is facts, because people are always looking for some justification as far as what side of the argument they fall when it goes back to Pete Rose. When gambling became, you know, legal with FanDuel and all of that, they came in. Every time something comes up with gambling, you're going to hit them. But before you even get into all of that, for those who say that FanDuel or DraftKings have something to do with it, that's not even the issue here, because in the state of California, it's all that stuff is illegal. There is no FanDuel. There is no DraftKings or none of that. And then to get to more of my point, what I really want to say, you know, I find it, you know, as much as it might be a naive take, you have to understand exactly who Shohei is, the talent that he is. I mean, you have not seen a guy like this in baseball. You can't even say in 50 years. In my mind,
ever.
He's never existed.
Yeah.
He's never existed. And, you know, baseball has been making overtures to court the international market. And as big a star as he is internationally, and the fact that the Dodgers were even able to work that contract the way they did because he was getting so much money outside, they have to be very – there's no way that they're going to just jump in head first into this. They have to be very, very careful about how they you know, what step they take or how they move in terms of how they deal with this, because he means so much more than just the Dodgers, you know, designated hitter, first baseman or pitcher. He is like, I mean, as far as all the people who argue about how Major League Baseball markets itself, he is one of the few people they want to put up as the face of baseball. So you have to be really, really careful about it. And at the same time also, whatever happened to, and I'm not trying to, because I'm a Yankee fan, so I could care less what happened to this. But at the same time, we're getting pieces, bits and pieces. The story's changed a couple of times. And I think people need to just let it play out, because at the same time, there's all these people, as much as you're speculating one way, I'm speculating one way, the other guys in the studio with you are speculating one way. Everybody wants to put the guy up as guilty, like he had to have something to do with it.
Oh, no. No. Absolutely not. I have no idea. I have no idea if he had any involvement or no involvement. I just know the story that I'm being told right now makes no sense.
And I hear you. We're all New Yorkers, and we're like, dude, this smells fishy. You know what I'm saying? So I totally agree with that. But at the same time, you can't jump to any conclusions right now, because, you know, another thing that you said, too, part of why he's not, you know, like I said, I think that Major League Baseball and the Dodgers have a lot to do with the way that he's going about any statements that he makes. But you also have to keep in mind, too, the dude that we're talking about in the center of all this is his translator. More than any other Major League player right now, he is somebody who is not going to get in front of a microphone or in front of an interviewer and start answering questions, because he's not even, like, I haven't heard him speak English, you know, not that he can't do it, but in a situation like this, God forbid, you know, something gets broken or lost in translation or something like that and adds an even bigger problem to what's going on, there's no way that he's going to feel comfortable trying to sit down with somebody and get ahead of this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
Well,
if that makes
I think they're trying to get ahead of it. And Val, thanks for the phone call. It made some good points. I think they're trying to get ahead of it, but they're doing it in a very PR way. And I think part of it, the issue that he has is that his team has screwed this up, right? The fact that, according to the timeline, Monday, ESPN contacted Ohtani's agent about information that Ohtani's name appeared on two wire transfers totaling $1 million. The transfers had been sent in September and October to a bookmaking operation by Matthew Bauer. I'm not sure if that's the right way you say his name. ESPN got no immediate response. That was at 3 o'clock. 2.5 hours later, a crisis communications spokesman for Ohtani, who had just been hired, responds to ESPN. Over the next several hours, he and an ESPN reporter talk at various times, as the spokesman says he is getting up to speed on the information from the Ohtani camp. 2 hours after that, 3 hours after that, the spokesman says for the first time that Ohtani paid debts on behalf of Mizuhara. So that's where the things first go bad for Ohtani, that his own spokesman is saying that he paid, because that's a crime. And that's not just a legal crime, that's a baseball crime. Him paying debts on the behalf, illegal gambling debts on the behalf of someone in his camp is going to be a major problem for him and his team. So that's why shortly thereafter, that they changed the story to, oh, wait a second. No, he didn't do something wrong. He didn't do something illegal. He didn't do something that could get him suspended. This money was stolen from him. So again, I don't know what the truth is. None of us really know at this point what the truth is. Hopefully, at some point, we will find out what the truth is. But as of right now, the stories that we have been given, first, that it was Ohtani paying the debts for Mizuhara on his own, $4.5 million in payments to this illegal gambler to clear his friend's name and clear his account for his friend, and then coming out and saying, no, the guy pulled off this massive theft of $4.5 million. Those two, I think to anybody, people that know about this story, that are big-time baseball fans, people that have never heard the name Shohei Ohtani, if you lay out those details like that, it's not going to pass the smell test. So who knows? Maybe down the road it'll become more clear. And I'm sure that for Ohtani not talking now, he always has that as a way out later on. If somebody asks, well, why didn't you say this right away? My team was advising me not to make any statements at the time. I had to go with the advice of the people that I hired, if it ever gets to that point. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number, 1-800-919-3776. Coming up, I said this before, I got to get into this. I saw the most confusing stat involving the New York Giants this week. It's one of those ones that when you see it, you're like, well, that can't be true. Well, it is true, and I'll tell you what it is coming up next. It's the Gordon Damer Show. It is 98.7 FM, ESPN New York.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Do you ever go to the grocery store, or you go to maybe Costco or BJ's, right? And you come back home, and you look at what you've bought, and you look at the receipt, and you think to yourself, this is all I got for what I spent? This is all I have? I spent this much money and this is it? Well, there was a stat I saw this week involving the New York Giants. And at first you think to yourself, well, there's no way that can be true, right? But it turns out it is true. Warren Sharp, who is on Twitter at Sharp Football, came up with the most expensive offenses for 2024. Entire offense, how much it's costing each team. And the number one team, and I guess it's mostly about the quarterback, is the Cleveland Browns. Okay, so they have the most expensive offense for 2024. And then after that, it's mostly teams that are paying their quarterback a high sum of money. So the Rams, Cowboys, the Chiefs. I guess the Broncos are on there because even though Russell Wilson's not there, they're still carrying that money on their books. Number six is the New York Giants. The New York Giants are the sixth most expensive offense for 2020. How can that possibly be? Talk about what am I spending money on? What are they spending money on? There's no team right now with a less clear picture on offense. They don't have... Well, they have, forget about Danny Dimes, it should be Danny Dollars at this point because Daniel Jones's contract is sizable at $40 million. But it's not like it's the number one quarterback contract on the books. It's, I think probably by now, it's probably 10, 11, 12, somewhere around. It's almost like middle of the road. What else are they spending money on offense? And it might make you feel a little better that the Cowboys are three considering the amount of holes that they now have on their roster, including left tackle with Tyron Smith going to the Jets. But the Eagles are 22. You talk about running laps around everyone else. The Eagles have what? Top five, top six quarterback, certainly a top 10 quarterback. They've had the best offensive line in football. They've got two excellent wide receivers. They have a pretty good tight end. They just added your running back. And they're still only at 22 and the Giants are at six? Man, oh man. And this offseason, it's a very interesting one. The draft is going to be fascinating to see what the Giants do with that sixth pick, speaking about being sixth. And you just kind of wonder, even with all the money that they're spending on offense, there's not a lot of answers on that offense. And if they do end up drafting a quarterback at six, even with Daniel Jones being here, you do kind of have to wonder, is this deja vu all over? Are they doing the exact same thing to the next guy that they did to the last guy, where they didn't really have a great list on offense to begin with, a lot great depth chart on offense to begin with? You hope that the offensive line is going to be better now, but it's not like fixing the offensive line for the Giants is something that they've just started to go about this offseason. That's been an issue since Eli Manning was here, and he's been gone for a while now. So I really do think, like, of all the scenarios, that if you were just saying, how do we get the Giants back to being a premier team and a team that threatens for division titles year in and year out, it really does kind of feel like the best approach would be to take that pick at six and hope that there's one quarterback that's left on the board that somebody wants to trade up for, and that you make the trade to trade down and stockpile picks. As much as a quarterback makes sense, and if you don't get that right, you don't have anything, it does not feel like the Giants are one off season away from fixing their issues, even with all the money that they are spending on offense. And you just kind of have to wonder, if they take J.J. McCarthy at number six, or they're not going to take anybody else there at six in terms of a quarterback, but wouldn't you be better trading down, stockpiling picks, getting an extra maybe first-round pick next year, getting an extra second-round pick this year, and kind of really remaking an offense that desperately needs to be remade? Don't have a number one wide receiver. Tight end is thinking about retiring. Offensive line in flux. No answers, no long-term answers at quarterback. It feels like if the Giants had simply franchised Daniel Jones last offseason, it's pretty clear what the path forward would have been, right? We wouldn't be talking about, well, is Daniel Jones going to be the starter week one? Is he going to be healthy week one? We'd be talking about already on to the next guy. The only problem with that is if you're Brian Daboll, certainly if you're Brian Daboll, and I don't know, maybe if you're Joe Shane, do you have 2 years? Can you withstand another season where you're winning five games and it's ugly? I don't think that they could survive another year that started out as badly as last year started out, but will you be able to survive? Do you have 2 years in you? That would be the best path forward for the Giants, looking at this as what it is, a rebuild. This is a rebuild situation, and you don't rebuild a team in 1 year. And certainly this Giant offense, find me an offense that looks worse than that Giant offense. And the fact that they're the sixth most money in the NFL on an offense, questions at quarterback, running back, number one wide receiver, offensive line, and tight end. Is that all? Great. But the big question there is, if you're the Giant brass making the decision at six, at least if you take a quarterback there, you would think it would buy you some time, because that guy's not going to be the starter coming in. If Daniel Jones is healthy, they're on record as saying that Jones will be the starter. And you'd like to think, if you're a well-run organization, you aren't going to have a coach draft a quarterback, transition to that quarterback some point in that following year, and then fire the coach and start all over with another coach who didn't pick the quarterback. It's a whole mess. So the best path forward for the Giants would be hoping that nobody's able to. The problem is, it really feels like as we get close to the draft, that five spot with the Chargers, that's up for grabs. It feels like the first four picks are pretty much set in stone at this point. The three quarterbacks in some order, Marvin Harrison Jr. at four, and then the Chargers, talk about needing a remake on offense. They really need a remake on offense, and if they're smart, they might be the team that says, hey, Broncos, Vikings, whoever, want to come up and get J.J. McCarthy, we're your spot, we'll move down, stockpile picks, and kind of remake this on the fly because we already got our quarterback. If you're the Giants, you got to hope that some other team, the Chargers, decide, no, we got to have Joe Alt or some other piece that they have to have there, and that you're the spot that teams are looking to trade up to. That would put the Giants on the best course moving forward, but unfortunately, it's not going to be a quick turnaround. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number, 1-800-919-3776. Coming up, we'll talk a little bit about the Jets as well. How's that? By the way, how's that, the Zach Wilson's agent? Has he been able to find He was given permission like a month ago. How's that turning out? I haven't heard anything. We'll get into the Jets next. It's the Gordon Damer Show. It's 98.7 FM, ESPN New York.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Joe Shane, his receipt is really confusing. $141 million. $148 million. The Giants' sixth most expensive offenses in 2024. And if they had re-signed Saquon, they would have been third. Wow. What? Where is it going exactly? What are we doing? And how is it possible that the Eagles, who are just loaded with offensive talent, wide receivers, tight end, O-line, quarterback, running back, guy you might know, they're sitting at 22. And I hear, I know what would happen on draft day if the Giants did decide to trade down. There would be a portion of the fan base. Oh, what are we doing? You know, when you're at the draft and you're watching the draft, you want your team to make the big move, the big splash. And picking a quarterback at six or certainly in the top 10, that is that kind of move. But it feels like to me, and again, I'm an outsider. I'm not a Giant fan. If you traded down and stockpiled picks and allowed somebody else to come up there and pick a quarterback, it feels like to me that what you're saying is we have a plan. We realize that this is not a quick fix situation, and it's going to take us a little while to fix everything. Again, you basically need everything on offense. Now, maybe the signings you made on the offensive line, they're all good. This time it's all going to work, right? This time, oh, it's all going to work. It's all going to come together. The offensive line, which has been such a mess for basically 10 years, it's all going to be perfect now. I know, right. But number one receiver, a tight end who's making $14 million, who was hurt most of the year last year and not productive. There's a lot of things to fix, and it's not a one-year offseason. The only problem is, and this gets back to winning these meaningless games, if you were sitting at five where the Chargers are, I'd feel really good about finding a team, finding the sucker at the table who would be willing to trade future ones and future twos to come up to five and take that pick off your hands, and you move down to, I don't know, where are the Broncos? 12, 10, wherever they are? And you can get a first-round pick next year, maybe an extra second-round pick this year. That's the only way you're going to turn this around. You're not going to simply wave a magic wand, draft J.J. McCarthy, put him in the same situation as Daniel Jones was in last year, and think it's all going to be okay.
Do you trust Joe Shane to make those picks, though?
Well, look, if you don't trust him to make those picks, then, I mean, what are we talking? Then no plan's going to work. I'm assuming that Joe Shane, if you give him enough shots at the dartboard, is eventually going to hit some bullseyes. But if you feel like he's not the guy for that, it doesn't matter how many picks he has. And it certainly doesn't matter if he's picking, then that's absolutely the reason why you trade down. Because if he blows this draft, well, then there's at least a possibility he's going out the door along with the coach. And then I'll have a future number one next year for whoever the next GM is. But look, at the end of the day, if you don't trust the guy who's pulling the trigger on the deals, there is no right plan outside of stockpile future assets for when that guy's gone.
The only reason why I say that is, what has he done since he's been here? What has he done besides the Brian Burns trade, which we don't even have a conclusive decision on whether that was the right move or not? Every other move, other than drafting Neal and Thomas, it hasn't worked.
It's been very hit or miss. And the misses have been monumental misses. Evan Neal looks like it was a complete flop with the seventh pick in the draft. If that continues on the path it's on right now, that is a huge, huge blow. And really, the biggest flop that he's made as a decision so far is paying Daniel Jones the long-term contract. Declining the fifth-year option right away, that would have kind of bailed you out. You would have had that extra year.
Nobody in their right mind would have done that, though.
What's that?
Nobody in their right mind would have given him their fifth-year option.
No, but he's the decision-maker, right? And okay, fine. We'll leave that one off the table, but signing him to a long-term contract rather than franchising him for an extra year, That's probably the worst decision that he's made as a GM, and it involves the quarterback. So those are two really big misses. Now, I like some other things that he's done. I like the Brian Burns move, but I feel like he has been a little hamstrung by the fact that they had that immediate success. So then you're forced to bring back Daniel Jones. You're forced to bring back Saquon Barkley when the right move would have been not having that really good year that first year, and then you would have had a clean slate and kind of gone about your business. But no, the jury on Joe Shane absolutely is still out. I'm not telling you that Joe Shane, I know for sure that he's going to turn this around or anything like that. Giant fans might think that, but I do think you have to give him a little bit more time. He did come into a terrible situation based on the previous GM. And a terrible cap situation based on the previous GM.
But Shane's compounded that situation.
No, absolutely. Look, he screwed up the quarterback. Absolutely. I'm just saying, in terms of the draft, I'm still willing to give him some another year here to see if he starts hitting on some moves. And I would feel more comfortable about him hitting on some moves with extra picks. Like, we all see every single year and every single team, they've got hits in the first round. They've got misses in the first round. The best policy or the best strategy is to give yourself as many shots at the dartboard as possible so that when you do have your misses, you can follow that up with a hit sometimes in the same round. And when you're talking about, I think the blueprint has kind of been laid out here. When you're talking about remaking a team, you need assets. You need as many assets at your disposal. You don't need just one big asset, like the sixth pick in the draft, which is, it's nice, but it's not two, three, or four. You're not getting the first quarterback off the board, right? You'll be likely getting the fourth quarterback off the board. And we kind of ran that down a couple of weeks ago. When was the last time four quarterbacks were drafted in the first round and all of them were good? When was the last time the fourth quarterback drafted in the first round was the best guy? When it was clear cut one, two, and three, and then the fourth guy was the best guy. And are you willing to bet your job and your career on you being right? Now, if you pick a quarterback there, it does buy you some time, you would think. But I think the better strategy, especially where the Giants find themselves, if they were the Vikings, I would say take the quarterback there. You've already kind of, that's a better situation for J.J. McCarthy. And that matters. Coming into a situation where the offensive line you know is pretty good, you have some skill position players, you have a coach who's shown you he's a halfway decent coach offensively, that's a whole lot better situation than what the Giants find themselves in right now. So if they were smart and if they were looking long-term, and I don't know that they can, but if they could look long-term, taking that pick and trading down would be the right call.